Woman's Journey, The Life of Annie Shanigan, for the Kodiak Oral History Project, December 3rd, 1994. Annie, when were you born?
December 16, 1947.
And where were you born at?
Perryville, Alaska.
Where is that at?
Perryville, down between Chinook and Sandpoint on the Aleutian Chain.
When you lived in the village when you were a little girl, what was it like?
When I was a little girl, I remember, you know, we talked about the echo. When I was a little girl, I remember everybody drinking in the village and partying all the time. And there was no rules of no VPS or anything.
So was it a happy childhood?
When I was about 11 years old, missionaries came down, and I didn't want to stay with my mom because she remarried, and I didn't want to stay with my dad because he remarried. So I talked to the missionaries, and I went to a Christian home up in Palmer for 2 years, and then to Wasilla for 2 years. So I went out for 4 years on my own.
It must have been tough.
When I look back, there were lonely times. You know, but I think I was in a better place than being home and being molested or getting pregnant at a young age. And it's helped me when I did go home when I was about 15 or 16. My dad tried to marry me out because the old way was they picked the husband for you. And when my dad mentioned it, I didn't want to get married. So what I did was I went up to the school and signed up for Mount Edgecombe. We had to go out for high school during those times because of no high school in the villages. So I signed up for Chemawa or Mount Edgecombe, and I didn't know which school would have picked me, but I went to Mount Edgecombe. And my dad didn't sign the papers, my stepmom did because she knew how bad I wanted to get out of there. Then I went to Mount Edgecombe and I never went back. I came to Kodiak and stayed with Mom.
Were you taught Native traditions in your village? Or even, not even in your village, but just growing up?
I think we grow up with Native values and traditions and keep them without ever really losing them, you know. Today I catch myself teaching my kids things that I did when I was a little girl, you know, certain things like, curfew for sure. My dad was really strict with that, and I did that with all my kids, you know, in at a certain time, to bed at a certain time. And I think it's just one of the rules that, you know, once you grew up with them, you teach your kids. And I remember church holidays. We all had to go to church. And then I remember people would just, you know, drink during those holidays when I was little. So I think I look back and see my time away from home is probably better for me. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody had that opportunity or the courage to get out of it, you know. I miss my family, but I think it was better for me. You know, I still like dried fish and seal and ducks and, you know, all the native foods we eat. I still make a gouda.
What's that?
It's blackberries mixed with Crisco and sugar.
Mm.
Yeah.
I tried some of that at the Canna gathering. This summer?
Oh, well, in Perryville we make it with the Crisco berries and the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And when I married Nick and moved to Akiak, they made it with, they called it Behina, and it was made with mashed potatoes and fish eggs, and I couldn't eat that.
Yeah, did it taste kind of like carrion?
It was rusting.
Yeah, that's
my kids couldn't eat it either.
I couldn't eat it at all.
When I moved to Akiak, I made it my way, and the people just loved it. But there are people that could eat that tahina for morning, you know, morning, lunch, and nighttime, three times a day. I couldn't. My kids tried it and vomited.
Yeah, I know.
It stinks. But I think that eggs have to be fermented, rotten, sort of half rotten or something.
Yeah, made me feel like I was eating roadkill or something.
Yeah.
And I hate to put, I'm not trying to put them down or anything,
yeah.
But I just, I'm sure there are some Cheyenne foods that they couldn't eat either. But anyway, you said your parents or the people you with taught you about traditions and the values,
and
it was just kind of naturally passed on instead of
my grandma and grandpa, you know.
How do you remember your parents?
I love both of my parents, but I was real young. I think I was 4 or 5 when my mom and dad got a divorce. But before that, I remember dad always beating mom up. Mom never drank. My dad did. But it seems like I remember as men being always beating their women up. You know, everybody, seems like all the guys beat their women up. And I remember hiding with my mom, and if dad beat her up and she got away, she'd be gone for days. And then when they split up, I remember dad staying in the house and mom walking out the door with the suitcase, and dad said, did I want to go or did I want to stay? And I just sat in the middle of the floor and cried because I didn't pick no sides. And it wasn't until I was,
So you stayed with your dad?
Stayed with my dad. Well, I stayed with dad for like probably 6 months and come to Kodiak with mom for 6 months, you know. I had one older sister or younger sister than me that we both traveled together. And then there was a baby that was given to my grandma and grandpa to raise. So I did a lot of traveling.
Who was your favorite relative while growing up?
Probably a cousin of mine. Somebody that sort of like took me under their wing. Or shared secrets. Yeah.
How old was she when you were your age?
Probably 16, 17.
And you were 16, 17 too?
No, she was 3 years older than I was.
Are you still close today?
Yeah, we are. She still drinks though. But I don't see that as a block, you know, it's just an opportunity.
Something that always is between you. Closeness.
Yeah.
How long, when, I don't know if you know this or not, but when was alcohol introduced into your village? Was it when the whites brought it in, or was it?
I think I remember my mom and her girlfriends talking about it when they were in their teens, when the PT boats, when there was a war going on, I think. And these boats used to travel up and down the coast.
World War II?
Yeah. Or there were boats going along the coast, checking the bays.
World War II then?
Then they'd come in, and I don't think my mom was old enough for that. Then these guys would stop in and bring booze, and they'd have dances. And maybe it was. Because we have a lot of people that are like part Russian in our village.
Or maybe, I don't know. You must have been really young.
I think there was drinking going on before I was born.
Must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, people that were 50 and there were like one or two.
Yeah.
So you must have been not even born.
Not even born. Mm-hmm.
So it just seemed natural to you to see people drinking. You didn't know anything different.
No, there was never any, no one ever said, don't drink, it's bad for you, or don't drink, you know, it'll get worse, or you're an alcoholic, you know, there was nothing said like that. Your grandparents did it, and you did, well, Dad drank, Mom didn't, but Mom did drink in her later years, and I drank with them, and in a village, you watch your grandparents drink, you watch your parents drink, you watch everybody drink, during holidays especially, and it's like a tradition. If, you know, if they drink, you drink, that was a thing to do. And being in the Christian home, alcohol was never brought up because it wasn't a problem there. So we weren't taught about drugs and alcohol. I got married, and then in the village, moving to another village, everybody drank. And I think I felt like an outsider, and in order to fit in, I drank with them.
How long were you married to your husband?
For 23 years.
And you drank with him?
I drank with him.
And would you, how would you classify your drinking?
Well, it was like holidays first. You drink just on holidays. Then it got to where it was everybody's birthday. Then it got to weekends. Then it got to if it rained or shined. I mean, my alcoholism was getting so bad to where it didn't matter. And I drank, and then it got to where I didn't drink one day, I'd drink for days. And, you know, Nick and I wouldn't say my marriage was all bad. You know, we've got five beautiful kids, and I thought it was normal for a woman to have a black guy because they're, you know, being beat up. And I've ended up in the hospital several times for being beat up. Mm-hmm. So the abuse, being abused was really bad, but I didn't know there was any other way, you know. I seen my mom beat up and other women beat up, and I thought all women were beat up. I thought that's what guys did to their women.
How many times were you put in the hospital?
Many times. The one time I remember was Nick was on a trip, and Fernando was about 3 years old, I think. And Nick's mom, my mother-in-law, was working in Alitac at the time, and she came up to get me on a skiff, and I went down to the cannery in Alitac, but it takes about 20-25 minutes by skiff to get from Akiak, the village, to Alitac, the cannery. I went down and I was drinking with her, and I didn't know Nick came back to the village. So he got on the skiff, came down and picked us up, brought us back to the house, and as soon as we walked in, I remember he flipped the table over, and it was one of those strong tables with the metal legs. Flipped it over, there was food on the table, he just flipped everything over, picked me up and threw me, and one of the metal things just missed my spine. Anyway, after that I got real high fever. They brought me to Kodiak to see a doctor, and I ended up in the hospital because my fever was just so high, and they couldn't find out what was wrong. And I was in the hospital here a week when they shipped me up to Anchorage, and when I got to Anchorage, they injected iodine to find out what was going on inside, and my kidney was popped. The doctor said, says, your kidneys are like balloons, and this is what happened. It got hit so hard it just ruptured. And they wanted to take me into surgery, but I wouldn't.
So it just healed scar tissue?
They gave me I don't remember how many bottles of ampicillin to see if it would heal because I didn't want to go into surgery.
Ampicillin?
Ampicillin, I think.
Ampicillin.
But I've been in the hospital with broken collarbone and, you know, just bruised so bad. There was one time, too, I came in and I was, I don't remember what was wrong, but Lydia was a counselor at that time. Lydia?
Lydia who?
Abbott. Mm-hmm. She was new, I think, and she picked me up, and I was so scared of Nick, you know, of what he would do. So she sent me up to treatment in Anchorage, my first treatment. And I didn't go directly into treatment. They shipped me up to AMS, and I was there for 3 or 4 days, I think. I don't remember.
Detox? Or just?
Yeah, to detox. And I was on so much pills, I didn't know, you know, really know what was going on. Anyway, it was like I came to, I was in treatment. Woke up one morning, I was okay, looked out, looked around, I didn't know where I was. Anyway, Lydia got me out of Kodiak so Nick wouldn't get a hold of me. And I stayed up there for 28 days. I didn't complete 30 days. When Nick found out where I was, he paid my way back. And I went back home. Stayed sober for 6 or 7 months. But I think that six to seven months was my most terrifying because I didn't drink during that time and Nick drank. And I'd make sure my kids' shoes, I'd let them go to bed with their clothes on and have their shoes ready to run out the door because Nick was partying in somebody's house, came home. We didn't know if he'd be mad, you know, start beating on everybody or throwing things around. And we got used to seeing him sleeping under the table or with his face in the food on the table. You know, it just got to be normal. And Nick would say, when Nick was drinking, he'd say, "Oh, come on, have one drink with me." And I'd refuse, you know, I'd say no. And then after a while it got to where he'd say, "You think you're too good for me, you don't want to drink with me." You know, and then it got to where I was getting scared because he wanted to pour it down my throat. So what I did was just started drinking again. And I think after I sobered up for that period of time, went back to drinking, it was worse than before. You know?
You were really depressed then.
Yeah, I was. I think I wanted to give up alcohol then, but was scared too. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't know there was help or there was any other way. And then I ended up, we went to Anchorage for 2 weeks. And I usually drink beer, but I was drinking whiskey, you know, just on that trip. And I went home. We went home after 2 weeks, and we quit. You know, we just quit drinking. And they called the Coast Guard to fly me in. And I had, I must have been having seizures, and I don't know nothing. I barely remember when they were taking me out of my house in the stretcher because I thought I was going to fall. So I put my hands out and then I don't remember anything. Mm-hmm. And Nick was on the helicopter with me and he said, "Well, while we're in the helicopter," I tapped the doctor like this to like tell him something, and Nick said he leaned down and I just hauled up and slapped him.
You must have thought it was Nick.
I don't know what I thought. I don't remember. I don't remember the ambulance ride. I don't remember getting into the hospital. But it was really bad. Mm-hmm. Bad. And that's when I wanted to quit.
How long was it after that you decided to leave Nick?
I never decided to leave him. I never thought about leaving him. When Exxon came in, is when we sobered up. We both sobered up for 2 years. We both had 2 years of sobriety. And then the oil spill happened, and then he was working, you know, long hours. And then he went back to drinking, and then I just moved into town. I didn't want to go back to that. I don't know how I stayed sober through my divorce. My baby was 6 months old.
Not only did you have your baby, but you raised your daughters too, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Junior was 2 years older. So
that was quite a chore.
I was scared. Yeah. Akiak had what, 60 people? Moved into town, and it's big. You know, we used to come into Kodiak for vacations, for shopping.
So you had, while you were going through your divorce, you experienced depression?
Oh, yeah.
And how did you climb out of that hole?
Friends. Friends from AA. And I went into depression so bad, I went from probably 170 pounds to 105 in 6 months. I couldn't eat. I didn't want to be around people. I remember shopping, you know, for groceries in here, and things would spoil because I got too much. I didn't know how to live in a city, I guess. I had to learn how. The one story I was telling AA is I remember buying so many apples, oranges, and bananas, the kids started using them as toys. Because in the villages you shop for lots, you know, like case of apples, case of oranges. And then in here I was just buying too much. Yeah.
They'll probably never know the difference.
Yeah, I remember I wouldn't go to store. I'd send my kids to store if I needed anything. I wouldn't go to store. And I remember Lydia coming in one time, and she says, "Come on, we're going to a meeting." And I said, "Well, I don't have a babysitter." And she says, "Well, I brought one." And she'd wait there until I got dressed and took me out. And just gradually going out again, you know, just snapped me out of it. But I didn't know then I was in depression. I didn't know what I was going through. Today, when I'm going through that, I see it right away.
And then you just call friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What were your teenage years like?
My teenage years, when I lived in Kodiak here. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I was in the homes. In summertime, I'd come down here to Kodiak to see my mom, or go to Chignik and Perryville to see my dad. But I remember one summer I was here, gosh, I think it must have been 15 or 16, when Lydia and I we'd get cab drivers to buy us alcohol, and we thought it was so neat to drink screwdrivers mixed in a cab. But we did drink, and you know, around here, Kodiak was small then, and this is before the tidal wave. Mm. You know, before the tidal wave came in, and we spend a lot of time on base because of the Navy being here. And we did our drinking, but I never thought of it as we never did anything bad. We never stole things or broke into buildings or nothing like that. We just scrounged up money and had cab drivers get us booze, and we'd charter a cab for an hour and drink our beer or screwdrivers or whatever.
So how old were you when you did this?
I was about 15, I think.
When was your first drink?
probably around 15. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a chance before because I was up at the homes and they were real strict.
Do you remember your first drink?
No, I don't.
Do you remember just always drinking hard? Was there...
No. No, I don't ever remember. I don't think I ever really had blackouts until after I got married. I think I was probably just scared, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when I went to Marnetska, there was never really any alcohol around, so we couldn't drink there either. So I was never really into drink until after I got married.
So how old were your kids when, or actually, how many kids do you have?
Five.
Mm-hmm. And how many of the kids out of the five saw the abuse of alcohol and of you?
All my four older kids. And there's a role each plays, the caregiver. What's the second one?
The hero. There's a hero, there's a...
Clown.
Yeah.
The caregiver and the silent one.
Okay,
my oldest son sloughed off his taking care of the kids and cooking to my... the next oldest child, Melanie, but he helped her, you know, he'd help her cook or clean up. Tanya was the one that would, if we fought, ran in the room, shut the door, like, don't see me, I'm not here. Fernando is the one that would laugh and try to make it go away, you know, just clown around make a joke of it. Still to this day, Fernando does it, and it pisses me off. If I'm angry, he'll make a joke or laugh or dance around like a clown. And Nick, my oldest one, is an excellent cook. So when I look back to see what my kids had to do, I think in a way it was good, but in a way it was bad. But they had to do things to survive. My oldest daughter learned how to bake and mess around in the kitchen and stuff. And, oh no, my youngest daughter did that. My oldest daughter did the lot. No, listen, my oldest daughter messed around in the kitchen baking. My other daughter, my younger daughter, did laundry. And I didn't realize the damage I did until we moved into Kodiak and I told Melanie, you better take this laundry down and do the laundry. And she says, Mom, I don't know how to wash clothes. She didn't know how to sort the darks from the whites or the lights. To where Tanya, you know, Tanya did that, but Tanya didn't know how to bake or do anything in the kitchen. So when we were at home, they had their chores to do, but it was one specific thing. And Nick, my boy, still cooks good. He's a good cook. And he learned. You know, he had to learn. He had to cook for the other children. I've hurt my kids. Still to this day, when all my older kids are together, they'll talk about, oh, remember this Christmas play? Mom and Dad were so drunk they couldn't go. It's not as often today as it, you know, they don't talk about it as often. But it, boy, that really hurts. It still hurts of all that I missed. But, you know, I look at, you know, God gave me these other two boys to do right, you know, raise them right. And that's what I'm trying to do. All my four older kids have been into alcohol and drugs. But there's nothing I can do, you know. I just pray for them and hope one day that, you know, they'll sober up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've shown them what to do if they want to, and then yes,
they know there's another way of life. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that's the most important thing of all. Not about all the bad that happened, but kids see what is happening now.
Well, you know, and I see it as whatever's happened, it's happened, you know, for reasons, you know, for maybe the future years in their life or their kids' life. You know, God didn't put us there to, you know, punish us or make us do bad things. It's, I think, learning, you know, like now I want to break the chain of alcohol with my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. All my grandchildren, my daughter and my daughter-in-law has carried their kids without alcohol or drugs during pregnancy, so they know the dangers of it. And it's, when I get together with my girls today, you know, we cry together, you know, and they just share how they felt. And Tanya turned 22 last month. She says, "Mom, you know what I remember most, what I really like?" She said, "I was a little girl and I'd sleep on the couch and I'd smell," she said, "if I smelled bread, I knew you were baking. If I smelled pine salt, I knew you were cleaning up." But she doesn't really remember the bad times. You know, and I think all children remember something good from their childhood, whatever made them feel good. Mm-hmm. Fernando says, "Mom, I remember coming out of the bedroom and you're cooking breakfast and the sun shining in the window and it just smelled so good in there." So, you know, they don't look at all the bad things, and maybe they've learned from them. Mm-hmm. Well, my daughters know today not to go with any guy that's abusive. They don't have to take.
One of the questions I wanted to ask, one of the final questions I wanted to ask was, what was one of your days drinking? Like when you woke up,
mm-hmm.
until you went to bed, what was like one of your drinking days like?
When I woke up, the mm-hmm. next, the day after?
The day after, or?
Oh, when I was drinking, I didn't get out of bed. I'd be so sick. I'd stay in bed for 5 days. And I'd try to get other people to come and like cook something for my kids, but my kids wouldn't eat anybody else's cooking. I'd be so sick, I'd just use the bathroom and just stay in bed. My hangovers were that bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got so bad to that. And it got to where I couldn't sleep. I'd have nightmares, so I'd stay up all night. And then when I finally did get up, I'd be shaky for a week, probably. But I did a lot of my drinking and I didn't eat. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't eat, I just drink. You know, get up and drink some more.
Well, you look healthy. I mean, you're not overweight and you're not underweight. But when you were drinking, were you really underweight? Or were you more bloated?
Probably bloated from the alcohol. Today, when I get up in the morning, it's no hangover. I didn't have any nightmares. I can do what I want because I'm alert. I don't have to shave. I feel really good today.
And you're also going to school full-time?
Half-time.
Half-time.
Well, my youngest one still isn't in school full-time. He's mm-hmm. in kindergarten. This is my third year.
And what is your goal?
I want to probably be an alcohol counselor or social worker.
I think you'd be really good.
People. I think whatever I choose to do, I'll be good at.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
I want to help Native people, help others. I've been through a lot. I know what it's like. I know where I came from. And I think I could help a lot of people because I've been there. And I don't know if it'll be next year or the year after. I'll probably go full-time.
Mm-hmm. It's hard if you have kids in school.
Yeah.
You have to work around their schedule.
Yeah, I can't.
Whereas if you have a baby, they can work around your schedule. Mm-hmm.
Well, he'll be 6 in February, mm-hmm. first grade next year, but I don't even know if I could go full-time yet, you know, until he's older.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping up with the laundry, cooking, and doing the dishes, my homework.
No, it's hard being a mom. I mean, a good mom.
Single parent.
Yeah. Because nobody's going to clean your house for you or cook. You got to do it all by yourself.
Yeah. I've ordered out for pizza a lot of times, just for a meal.
Mm-hmm. That's what you have to do sometimes.
Or hot dogs and wieners. I don't like wieners, but my kids like it. And they'll eat it, you know,
and whatever they eat. My daughter likes it too.
Whatever they eat's fine, you know, as long as they eat. I keep up with my laundry, though. I've got to keep up. If I go behind in my laundry, it's like too much to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind if the dishes don't get washed. But, yeah. I feel good today.
If there's one thing you could tell the Native children and any children of the world, what would it be?
You mean all children?
Mm-hmm. And the Native children, because you want to help the Native people.
But stay away from drugs and alcohol. You know, they don't have to be like your parents or grandparents. And they can be anything they want. You know, if you want, whatever you want to be in life, you can be. You know, if you set your mind to it. Just do it, and just don't say you're gonna do it. Do it, you know, as scary as it may seem. When I was first starting college, I remember I was so scared, just so terrified. And then today it's like, what was I afraid of, you know? I think fear stops a lot of us from doing what we wanna do and reaching our goals. And if we could just overcome that fear and just go for it, you know. But drugs and alcohol, you know, it's in the villages, there's no one to just stress to them it's not good, you know, it's not the way of life. I think it's better today than it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But still, there's just so much of it. You know, just tell the parents to teach their kids. I do with mine all the time. I tell them, no, drugs and alcohol are bad.
And what would you tell the young women in America that have been in abusive relationships?
Oh gosh, get out of it. Don't stay in it. All men aren't abusive. I didn't know this, you know, till I'd been married after several years. But, you know, when I was first married and being abused, there was no help like there is today. There was no resource center. There was nobody to call. Or if there was, I never knew about them. I tell my daughters, if this guy's going to beat you up or be abusive to you, physically, mentally, however way, you don't have to take it. You don't have to stay in that relationship. There are nice guys out there. Just, you know, the fear, like I think a lot of women have today, they don't want to get out of it, or they don't know how. But there is help, and they don't have to stay in it. Especially for kids, the kids' sake, you know.
Well, thank you for your time.